football on Off the Ball.
If someone has a song that referenced Sheffield or Hillsborough about Liverpool crying, we'd be up in arms.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Final One Standing by William Hill on Off the Ball. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
All right, you're pitting your wits this week against the big brains of football. That's Shane Hannan and David Wilson. And before we get into this, Shane, I think we should both just pay due deference to the man here to our left and what he's wearing.
It's gorgeous.
A lot of us just see things on Instagram, and I've managed to wean myself off the addiction of click, 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 click. And then a man is at your house, like almost instantaneously delivering stuff. You're like, oh, did I buy that again? But you follow through.
I follow through, yeah. I follow through on the Evan Ferguson Roma hype train. So, yeah, there's a bit of an Irish kind of twinge to the jersey. So I think.
Is it a fluke? Was it in the works?
I think it is a fluke, yeah. It absolutely is a fluke, but because he was linked to go to Atalanta as well heavily before he actually did decide to go to Roma.
So they always had the green, white and gold as it is.
Yeah, I don't know. They've usually had a white alternate kit, but I think this one they've just kind of struck gold with the Evan Ferguson transfer.
See, David, as well, like it's white, and David obviously has the South American tan still ongoing, so he looks even more tanned. It's not a tan you see in Dunamoyne and South Monaghan too often. But
you'd be surprised.
Off.
The Armada blood, it's sweat the hood.
True, yeah.
You
know, yeah.
You and me, pasty face, pasty skinned. Yeah. But there is a core of Irish people who just, you know, they go outside, they pick blackberries and they come back and there's permatanned.
You need to get to South Monaghan more often.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah. It's got the kind of tapered arms as well. I like it. The colour's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So it's kind of Ireland in the... What Irish jersey? Ireland in the early 80s, late 70s, was there a jersey similar to that? An away one?
A shape and the Adidas three stripes, I think, yeah.
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 Looks well.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's an investment also, because you know the retro jerseys are going for crazy money these days. So hopefully 20, 30 years down the line after Evan Ferguson has a 30 goal season in Serie A in his first year that I could sell it maybe for a bit more profit.
There's not many jerseys that I regret not buying, but there's a few. There's that Tipperary 1916.
Yeah.
Bloody Sunday.
2020 jersey.
Yeah. I think that is a thing of beauty anytime I see it. And there's the blue Republic of Ireland one that looks like an empty jersey.
Yeah.
They're the only two that I regret that I missed out on.
I think we only wore that once as well.
I think so.
We beat Qatar like 4-0. I think Callum Robinson scored a couple of goals. And I remember that jersey was just amazing and we played really good football. Unfortunately, it was only a friendly, but an amazing jersey, though.
And that was Umbro, and obviously we can't get that again because we're with Castore now. I don't mind the Castore. Everybody hates them, but I actually don't mind them at all.
No, I'm a fan. I'm a fan. And remember the Manchester Derby they did a few years ago where they had the old Munich. I think it was maybe the 50th. It was the 50th anniversary of the Munich air disaster.
Yeah.
2008, and they had the old jerseys from that year that they wore. It was gorgeous.
And the players are numbered 1 to 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you don't see too often.
What jersey were you wearing at all together now?
What jersey was I wearing? I did have a Palestine jersey on at one point. I had a couple of retro numbers. It's all a blur, Jer, that whole weekend. I was wearing one on the Friday night. I was. What jersey was it? I'll have to look at a photo of myself to remind myself what I was actually wearing.
We're going to help Goal with their jersey day this year, and everybody needs to find a jersey that means something to them, and we'll talk about that again at some point in the future. If you were to power rank your current jerseys very quickly off the cuff.
I have a lot. I have a really nice I got a Montenegro shirt there recently, a nice red one, but I think this is number one for the time being. Sentimental value, I got a nice Maradona 86 style Boca shirt or Argentina shirt in the La Boca neighbourhoods back in 2023, so that's a pretty cool one. That's probably my favourite one in the wardrobe.
You can't ask me after that. I mean, set me up for failure here. I have lovely Monaghan 85 Ulster Cup, Ulster winning team. Yeah. And the Andre Kanchelskis 14 on the back of the red one with the string. The Manchester United home kit from like around 94, 95.
Yeah.
Kanchelskis, yeah, cult hero.
Yeah.
I stayed loyal to Juan Pablo Angel when I went to Buenos Aires and went to a River game and bought River jerseys. I don't know what I was thinking. I was like, I was obsessed with Maradona and have been since the 1986 World Cup. I don't know why I didn't just go like, sorry, Juan Pablo. Love you and all. Like your hustle. That's why it's so hard to cut you. But I've no Boca. I didn't buy any proper Maradona gear there. It was like so stupid.
Mm, yeah.
What's wrong with me? Anyway.
Yeah. Good back.
Right. So you're welcome along to Final One Standing this week. We've been somewhat sidetracked by the dazzling beauty of David's shirt. If you're still with us, well done. if you dropped out in the first week, don't worry. I suspect that maybe certainly our league might not last as long as the overall league. We have a graphic for this week's picks, right? Which I think, I don't know, maybe it's not as straightforward as everybody else says. Owen, Nathan, Mick and Matthew have picked Arsenal. Eve, Shane and Kian have picked Bournemouth. I've gone for Man City. And David, you've gone for Sunderland. So I'll give you the actual fixtures in just a moment. But we should shout out to Eve first.
Yeah.
Who
all last credit.
Went what? Against the grain. Picked Leeds to beat Everton.
In the Monday night football game.
It's away, yeah. All the way to Monday night as well.
Like, yeah. I mean,
the nerves are jangling.
Pick the Friday night game, get it over and done with.
Yeah. It's a brave call. Well, the argument is that Leeds maybe shouldn't have won that game in the end. I don't know, the penalty decision was up in the air a little bit. But it was a brilliant game on paper. Maybe didn't live up to the hype and the expectations, but still, Elland Road on a Monday night looks absolutely brilliant, and it's the reason why we all like Leeds back in the big time. Or
yeah,
do we?
The atmosphere was an abysmal game, right? I mean, I'm not entirely sure what Leeds are doing with their transfer policy. They just signed a striker yesterday who's like 7 starts in 2 seasons in Serie A, and they spent like 15 to 20 million.
Yeah, no, Okafor, yeah. They played against them in Dublin, actually, here. Leeds played AC Milan, and I think it was a case of, oh yeah, he looks pretty good. We might try and sign him. So they've got him into the squad out of this weekend.
A reported fee which could rise to £18 million. Now, maybe he just had a bad time in Italy. Maybe he is like Patrick Vieira-esque in terms of on the bench at Milan and then comes and bestrides the Premier League like a colossus. Mm. Or maybe it's just another waste of £18 million quid that they could have not.
Yeah, I'm also concerned. You'd be concerned about strikers who come sometimes from Serie A to the Premier League. I know it can work vice versa, but like you look at Rasmus Højlund, came from Atalanta and did okay with Atalanta, and then people are thinking, oh, he's going to tear it up in the Premier League, and it just doesn't happen. So it's a risky move. But then again, for Leeds, I mean, they just have to hit that 40-point mark, I guess, this season. And it's just, well, sometimes the 40-point mark isn't enough. So
34, yeah. 34. You're never going down with 40.
Usually, yeah. But look, all of a sudden the conversation was around the promoted teams and all. They're all going to go back down again. But a few people have changed their tune, I think, after what happened last weekend.
But there's a lack of strikers and wingers out there, so they have to pull the trigger on someone.
The John Giles era with Off the Ball has come to an emotional end.
Off the Ball wouldn't exist the way it does without the existence of John Giles.
Helped by a plethora of John's friends and family within and without football, we pay tribute to the great man in front of a selected audience.
So we are here tonight to celebrate not just the impact John has had on Off the Ball over the last 20 years or so, but really the unrivaled impact that he's had on Irish football going back 70 years.
This week in the OTB football feed, look out for the full John Giles tribute night.
If we didn't say John was the best player I've ever played with, he would tell you why he was.
Eddie, I might come to that in a minute. Yeah.
We speak to John himself about his 7 decades in football, former Leeds teammates Eddie Gray and Joe Jordan, plus tributes from Liam Brady, Brian Kerr and many more.
As you say, it's what, 20 odd?
23 years.
20 years. Well, they did well to put up with me for 20.
Released in 3 parts, we'll drop the first part of the John Giles tribute night on Tuesday morning. And to mark the occasion, it will be available for free for a limited time only. The John Giles tribute, only available in your OTB football feed.
This weekend's fixtures: West Ham versus Chelsea, Man City versus Spurs. That's tomorrow at 12:30. The West Ham Chelsea's game is tonight. The 3 o'clock kickoffs: Bournemouth versus Wolves. A lot of people going for Bournemouth this week. It's Brentford versus Villa. Not quite must win for Brentford, but they definitely need to put in a performance. Burnley versus Sunderland is also a 3 o'clock kickoff. Is it a relegation 6-pointer, or are Sunderland just a much better team than Burnley at this point? We don't know yet. Arsenal playing Leeds at 5:30. At the Emirates. It's Palace versus Nottingham Forest at 2 o'clock on Sunday. Everton Brighton is also 2 o'clock, and Fulham Manchester United is 4:30 when Newcastle take on Liverpool. It'll be Monday night at 8 o'clock. Lee Phelps is with us. Lee, good afternoon to you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm still alive after last week, so I'm pretty good.
I'm gone. I went Brighton. I'm out of there.
You were nearly home and hosed, and they should have been.
I know. I was watching it and I was like, as it ticked on, I was thinking, Fulham are coming on pretty strong here. Just keep them out. It's amazing how it changes your viewing pleasure of a game. But me and just over 110,000 players went out of the main €500,000 game last weekend. So still a chunk left in. Still, I think, 177,000 left in of the main game. Got to get your picks in tonight by 8 p.m. Friday by 8 p.m. It was 12:30 Saturday last week for the main game. All picks must be in by 8 p.m. Friday, so make sure you get them in. There's still a few, looking at the numbers, there's still a few yet to pick for this week. But looking forward to seeing what everyone goes for. I'm involved in a few private leagues, including your own, and I'm gonna go sensible this week. I tried to be clever and pick a team who might leave the big guns later on. I'm going Arsenal. I'm just going. Everyone else is going Arsenal. I'm just going Arsenal. I think over 40% of players have gone Arsenal in week two. So that's where I'm going.
Okay. I've got Man City because I think it might be an overreaction, though. And do Spurs come out and put in a rear guard action the way they did against Paris Saint-Germain, play five at the back, and everybody's like, ooh, that's new. That's why my concern here, maybe I'm being too clever and overreacting to Manchester City's opening day.
Well, Tottenham have got, not wanting to worry you too much, I'm sure you've seen this, but Tottenham have got an unusually good record against City and at City. I know last season there's going to be a few stats thrown around about City this year where they're taking into account like what might have been a blip. We'll wait and find out, won't we? But they won 4-0 there last year, Tottenham, and in recent seasons had a 3-3 draw, they've won 3-2. Now, Harry Kane was involved in some of those goals. So was Heung-min Son heavily involved. You look at Kulusevski, he's had a really good run at the Etihad. Goals, assists, he won't be playing either. So I just wonder if this Tottenham has got the goals in it. I know they scored three last weekend, but, you know, will Richarlison just keep producing those kind of performances week in, week out? You'd have to say, looking at City, the opposition you could question, but they seem to have the bit between the teeth. I really like Tierney Reinders. I'm not telling anyone anything they don't know, but put him up to score a goal last week. He actually scored, assisted and got a card last week. That's like the kind of the treble in bet builders where, you know, if you put that on this week, it's 70-1 for him to do that again this week. We may have missed the boat with him doing it last week, but we've also got a big epic boost on the match as well. That's Erling Haaland to score or assist, even money from 1-3, max bet of €10 on that one. But he looked fantastic again last weekend, didn't he? They've got so much firepower that surely City win that one.
It's just so hard to know if it was a blip or not. And I suppose we won't know really until Christmas. But if they were to lose a couple of games now, everybody would say that's a continuation. But if they were to win, I actually don't think I'm going to trust them properly until springtime when there's big games in the Champions League coming thick and fast, and then there's also Premier League matches that they need to win, and that's the bit where you go, right, it was just completely the end of one cycle and the start of a new one.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think we'll probably see, I think the betting market will probably react similarly. If Liverpool and Arsenal continue to win as well, then I think the betting market will stay pretty much as it is for the outrights. I guess it just depends on the nature of their wins. I guess Liverpool look good, but defensively a little bit shaky. Obviously, Man City and Tottenham won and won well against, you know, inferior opposition. Arsenal obviously won, but didn't look massively impressive, especially not going forward. But, you know, let's see how they perform this week. Obviously, they've got, like I said, they're the number one pick in Final One standing, and, you know, Leeds are given a 10% chance of winning at Arsenal. I think that's probably fair enough as well. It probably could be bigger than that. That's no disrespect to Leeds at all, but, you know, if you played that game 100 times at Arsenal, you'd expect, you know, Arsenal to win at least 90 of them, I think. I think with the transfer news this week around Eze as well, I mean, that, you know, it's a great signing, and of course what it means in North London as well is it's added insult to injury to Tottenham and Arsenal fans obviously loving it. So you'd expect them to beat Leeds, wouldn't you, on Saturday evening?
Was there any change in Man City's price to win the league outright after last week's performance?
No, it's a smidgen. Things changed a little bit round when Liverpool won. Obviously, Arsenal didn't play until afterwards, so kind of it's smidging, but yeah, you kind of as you were in terms of the order of betting. And, you know, these things don't change massively anyway, you know, unless there's, you know, a real calamity. Once Man City started to lose consecutive games last season, that's when it really changed. I think we'll see very similar. Unless one of those three teams I've mentioned start to lose consecutive games, then that's when it may change. Or if conversely, if Chelsea, for instance, can put a run together, you know, of consecutive wins, then we'll see it change. But yeah, Chelsea pretty disappointing in the end last weekend, weren't they? A lot of people went out of Final One standing because of, you know, Chelsea drawing with Palace. Villa Newcastle also cost a lot of people. I think about 50,000 players went out off the back of that Villa Newcastle game at 12:30 last Saturday when, you know, the draw. It's got to be a win. You can't draw. So that draw took out a lot of people.
Were they Villa supporters or were they Newcastle supporters?
Well, it was pretty equal. It was a pretty much equal split. I think it was actually like 25,000, 22,000 or something like that off the top of my head. So yeah, it wasn't much in it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
The one interesting one, going back to kind of like picking the surprise teams, 7,000 players of the 300,000 in the game picked Sunderland. By the way, so they're sat there this week thinking, I've used one of the promoted teams, they're done and dusted, I coasted through, now I can use a big hitter this weekend.
How long do you think, realistically, the game could last?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've asked that ourselves, really, and I think we've said between 10 to 12 weeks, maybe. Right. So we're going to get through the international break. And by the way, Liverpool might not get picked until after the international break. They've got Burnley, first game after the international break, which is fast approaching, of course. So it might be that a lot of people have got Liverpool. I'd be interested to see what the percentages look like that week on how many people pick Liverpool in that first game week back after the international break. But remember as well, if you've gone out like me, then there are new jackpots released every week. So there's a 50K jackpot available right now. So if you didn't play the first week or you got knocked out, then you can play that new jackpot every week, and there'll be a new jackpot released as soon as we kick off for this weekend, and we'll keep doing that throughout the season as well. So no need to not be involved, even if like me, you were kind of a bit grumpy about it on Saturday afternoon.
So I think the Off the Ball League slightly outperformed the overall league. Is that right? We lost about 20 last week from our 140 as a percentage. We're doing okay. Not amazing, but okay.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about, you know, this is the kind of, you know, the main game is huge, of course, but being able to set up your own private league, you know, I think I've been involved in many of these, last man standing games, and there's always some poor soul who gets the short straw and has to get the Excel spreadsheet out, don't they, and have to keep all the scores and remind you to get your picks in, and like, obviously, you know, free to play, just do it for you. So if you've got a group of mates who want to get involved and want to set your own up, you can just set your own private league up and run it separately, as just the same way you guys have done. And there's private leagues all over the place as well. So it's interesting to see how many of those get set up as we get into the season proper. But yeah, fingers crossed that you all get through this weekend.
Lee, good stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Thanks, guys.
It's Lee Phelps from William Hill there. So who did you pick last week?
So actually last week we done a slot last Tuesday, and I said, oh, you know, I think you should pick Sunderland this week, first game in the stadium light. And then they went and won 3-0, but obviously I picked Liverpool.
Ah, okay. I ended up changing at the last minute to Liverpool as well.
Yeah, I went for Spurs to beat Burnley, which obviously worked out. By the way, I have no sympathy for anyone who chose Chelsea to beat Palace. That was a dodgy fixture from the get-go. And anyone who chose Villa or Newcastle, like, again, that's a game where if you're calling that game with any form of confidence, it's a bit silly.
Well, yeah, it was such a weird game. Newcastle absolutely hammered them in the first half.
Yeah.
They looked good for 10 minutes. Red card happens. Rear guard action. Newcastle should have won.
You have to be tactical about this, though. And I hadn't caught that Liverpool play.
Can I just counteract that with what we just heard? They expected the last 11 or 12 weeks. Pick the 11 or 12 best teams. Don't be going near your newly promoted sides.
I've been kind of avoiding. Yeah, I'm holding on to the Cities and the Liverpools at the moment. Like, I've gone for...
At some point, you're going to have to pick Man United. How treacherous will that feel?
When do you pull the pin on that one?
It's a treacherous one if you pick them this week. Away to Fulham, I don't really have any good feelings about that from a Manchester United perspective.
Is that not a historic 2-0, 3-0 game over before? You know, certainly as a football watcher over a long period of time, routine 2-0, 3-0.
Listen,
there's not any more, obviously.
No, but there's more optimism about Manchester United after last weekend. After one game, we'll all jump to conclusions here, but they looked far better than at any stage last season. Acuña was brilliant. Mbeumo was the focal point of the attack. Šeško is going to take a bit of time. Maybe he goes in from the start this week. I don't know. Like, I think there's more optimism. And to lose as well to a team in Arsenal who are certainly title contenders in the manner in which they did. Not the worst start of the season. I know they didn't pick up any points, but still.
I love the lies football fans tell themselves.
Until they lose 3-0 to Fulham.
It's amazing.
Weekend,
yeah. It's like, Oh, we never played that well last season. And Arsenal are title contenders. The Arsenal played really badly and frequently against the good teams. Man United have been good over the last few years. They kind of raised their game. It's the bit where they're supposed to be flat track bullies, where they're not big time Charlies, where you just put the effort in against the mediocre sides and your superior quality is supposed to tell.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that because actually they beat Fulham last year in a terrible game of football on a Sunday night. A 1-0 Lisandro Martinez deflected effort, so went into the back of the net. But Manchester United, this has been their problem, not just this last season, but for the last several years, that they cannot beat the mid-tier sides, let's say, away from home.
And peers.
Yeah, and well, they're peers, yeah. But Fulham got a rescued a 1-0 draw last week against Brighton. Rodrigo Muniz looked like he's going to stay. He was all set to go to Atalanta last week. Looks like he's going to stay, and there's something to be said for a bit of solidity and kind of keeping a similar squad to what you had last season. And Marco Silva is a really good head coach, and Fulham are probably going to be similar to what they were last year.
It's the keeper situation that's stressing a lot of United fans. Obviously Bayindir was at fault for the goal.
Who'd
last
you
week
pick?
Over Onana and him.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a Sylvie's choice. Like, that's not like Bayindir is taller, arguably stronger, but he clearly he clearly wasn't strong in the in-swinging corner last week. And Onana makes too many mistakes to be the number one. So
is it possible Bayindir might turn into a goalkeeper over a period of time? But you actually don't get a period of time. You don't get 20 games to find out what it's like to play in the Premier League.
Yeah,
that if he was playing at a team who had just been promoted or a team with less pressure, he would make these mistakes. He'd iron them out, and because there's the bones of a talented goalkeeper there.
Yeah, look, he's played in Turkey, where obviously the atmosphere and the pressure is fairly high week to week as well. In fairness, and he had a really good performance against Arsenal, wasn't it? Arsenal last year, where he was really good one day
in the FA Cup. Yeah, he saved a penalty.
So, like, I don't know.
You don't remember?
Yeah,
I remember.
Well, Amorin was vehemently defensive of him after the game last week, and
yeah,
I don't know. That's a bigger issue. It's probably one of the most pressure positions in world football. Goalkeeper at Manchester United, in fairness.
Yeah, I mean, they should they clearly have loads of money if they're even thinking about a bid for Wharton, so they should go and spend the money. The whole great piece during the week with Owen, and I've forgotten his first name, Maguire, the finance expert.
Kieran Maguire.
Yeah, he was like, Man United have loads of money. They've been printing money for a long period of time and they can easily afford to spend, and if they want to spend, they can find ways to do it. So if they want to sign a goalkeeper, they could do it.
And Quevin Kelleher was available. Let's be honest. I'd be shocked if they hadn't made some sort of approach, but there's no way in hell that Liverpool
Martinez
was going to sell.
Is there for 45, 50 million if they want it.
But Janaga Fjortoft was linked to them again this week with Gianluigi Donnarumma. Donnarumma's been forced out of PSG because he's not that good with his feet. But actually, if you watched the game last Sunday, Altay Bayindir was quite kind of pivotal to the way United were playing and kind of plucking passes into the middle of the field and kind of finding people in little gaps. So
don't go back to Donnarumma.
So Manchester United got rid of David De Gea maybe two seasons ago because he couldn't play with his feet. So yeah, it remains to be seen what they'll go for the goalkeeping department.
Quick one about Richarlison, right? So you start the season really well. You've had a good pre-season. You're finally, feeling yourself, and then you're reading the papers. Oh, I'm going to Palace. I'm like, what? What's going on here? I'm not going to Palace now. Oh.
Yeah.
I know. But then, how much of this is in-club talk, how much of it is agent talk, how much of it is newspaper talk?
Well, it seemed to be like it was very close to happening. Yeah.
Enough credible people put their name beside that story for me to think, whoa.
There's Richarlison's agent ringing to say it's not true. But he had a smile on his face last weekend, Richarlison. Obviously, he was scoring goals, but Richarlison's often this grumpy sort of figure. The body language says a lot.
No, you don't rate me here, Thomas. I mean, you pick me and you don't rate me, and I score all these goals, and you're like, oh, you're great. Now you're screwing me out.
Well, he was Brazil centre forward going into the 2022 World Cup. Like, he's not, like, he does have bags of ability. He's had a very bad injury, a bad run of injuries over his kind of whole career at Tottenham, but he played the Europa League final last year. You were there, Shane. He played off the left. He kind of destroyed United down that right hand side. Like, he was so good at keeping holding the ball up and bringing players into play.
So you actually think Spurs would be better keeping him?
I think you should absolutely keep him. Yeah, like, Solanke is very streaky at best, and he's grand. Whereas Richarlison,
merge them into the same player.
Exactly, and Thomas Frank is going to have a plan for both, or to use one or the other each week, and they're going to play loads of football. They're in the Champions League as well.
As we're recording this, Seba Etchezi hasn't officially signed, even though he wasn't part of the squad last night for Crystal Palace. So we'll see what happens and when that actually gets done. But I think that's a transformative signing for Arsenal. I think it allows them to take Odegaard out, it allows them to take Saka out, it allows them to like manage minutes in games, and they're going to have so many big games this year and so much pressure on them.
Well, this is why you should be making your Premier League title predictions after the transfer window, because if Liverpool don't get Isak, and look, they already have a lot of talent, but if Liverpool don't get Isak and Arsenal get Eze, that's transformative, as you said, for both of those teams. So do Arsenal become narrow favourites if those two deals go those certain ways? I don't know.
That's
a massive deal for Arsenal if they get that over the line.
Yeah, but Mikel Arteta has a track record of turning really exciting players into really boring, methodical players. So I don't really... Like, Eze is like a magnificent player to watch for Palace, and he has been over the last couple of years. But I don't know, the way Arsenal... I know they won the game last week, but I have concerns about their boring, methodical, slow pace of football. I know Kai Havertz is out for a few weeks as well. We don't know how long his knee injury is going to keep him out for.
Very quiet about how bad the damage to the knee is.
Yeah, and they get injuries. They constantly get injuries when not even in games, but in training as well throughout the last season as well. But it is another body for the squad, which they definitely do need in Eze.
Owen, Nathan, Mick and Matthew have picked Arsenal this week. Eve, you, Shane and Kian have picked Bournemouth. Any doubts about that?
Well, I know Bournemouth lost last week, but you saw enough in that game at Anfield to suggest that they'll be okay this season, that they could even push on and be kind of around 11th or 12th in the table potentially. Maybe they have loftier ambitions than that, but Semenyo's obviously brilliant. I really like the whole Bournemouth project. I like what they're doing.
Areola's class, but he is. This is his last season there, right?
Did you hear, was it Nathan? Yeah, Nathan at the start of the comms on Sunday last weekend. John was asking him for, himself and commentary team, Brian Kerr, et cetera, for predictions for the season. And Nathan said, I'm going to make one outlandish prediction. Areola will be the Arsenal manager by the end of the season.
All right.
Which I thought was a wild chart, but obviously he feels like the Arsenal project, there's a lot of pressure on Mikel Arteta to get it right fairly quickly this season. You know, if, say Christmas, they're not within the realm of the title, or say they're fourth or fifth and performances haven't been that great.
That's before the Eze news came through.
True. Well, even more pressure on the shoulders.
I think Eze is a transformative player for them. I think it's like Cantona-esque. I think it is John Barnes joining Liverpool. It's that level of injection of something different into the team. And that's my hostage to fortune. That's my outrageous. I've gone from Man City to beat Spurs. I'm not doing it with great confidence. I do think there's still a flakiness there. Those half 12 kickoffs always terrify me when you're making predictions. You said Sunderland were going to win week one. You're saying Sunderland are going to win week two.
Yeah, they were just so good last week, but I just didn't have the confidence to follow
away
through.
Away at Burnley,
yeah. I thought Burnley were... They stuck in the game last week against Tottenham until around the error mark, but the way Sunderland play is a bit of a throwback. They're great to watch. They kind of play with kind of three at the back and they just kind of flick balls down the channels and they get balls into the box. They have quite a big physical side, like Mayenda, Wilson Isidore. They're going to just be really hard to beat and they're going to score goals, and I just fancy them to put out another statement, and Reggie Lebris is going to put in another good performance to beat Scott Parker's Burnley on Saturday.
I thought they were going to struggle. I called them, look, they still might struggle, but I called them to be one of the relegated teams. That such a young team, a team that have not a lot of Premier League experience, a lot of debutants last weekend, but it just seemed to work. The one thing I like to see Sunderland doing off the pitch as well, I don't know if you saw this, where it was, I think they have around 80 season ticket holders who are 85 years of age or older.
Oh, right.
And they've given them all free season tickets for the season, so you know they're getting all the neutrals on board.
That's pretty good. Yeah,
they've had some troubled years, obviously, as Netflix has advertised, but I mean, on the evidence of last weekend, they'll...
Is it Julia Louis-Dreyfus's cousin is the owner?
That rings a bell. It's definitely a Dreyfus, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. It is a Louis Dreyfus.
All the way back to the Dreyfus affair, I think they can trace their right. lineage. I think so, yeah.
They've spent the most money outside the top six, so that should be good for something. They've just signed Nordi Mukiele from PSG, which is a pretty big signing for a right back.
I thought all these transfers, though, were part of the reason why I was saying that they'd go down, because it takes a bit of time to meld that many new signings together, but obviously it worked last weekend.
I keep an eye on Forest this season. That's my other outrageous. I think they might finish fifth.
Well, just as we kind of talked this morning, Nuno Espirito Santo has been rumoured that he could be sacked for not following through what the board has, or the owner, Evangelos Marinakis, has wanted him to do over the last couple of weeks. So watch the space.
Mm. Still think they might. Andoni Iraola, come on down. your money is good here. Right, that is this week's. I do think it, in Sunderland, right, the win bonus has hit everybody's pay packet. There is like a mad party situation where the atmosphere was incredible, and then Burnley are sitting there getting angry and looking at it and like, okay, we'll see you next week, lads. Mm. See you out there.
Yeah.
Kyle Walker playing right of a back three. His legs were finished years ago.
Leadership, though. Leadership.
Final One Standing and Off the Ball is brought to you by William Hill. Make sure you get your pick in before the 8 o'clock kickoff tonight. We'll see you next week, folks. Take care.